Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast.
Today I have Sean Wildermuth. Sean is the owner of Agilitrain. He's a Microsoft MVP, and he's the author of the forthcoming Essential Windows Phone 7.5 from Addison Wesley. Sean, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing, Jesse?
I am doing extremely well. We have with us John Galloway, my erstwhile co-worker and sometimes co-host. John?
Howdy. Hello.
There we go. So, Sean, you went to Build?
I did go to Build.
Why don't we start there? Tell me about your impressions of Build.
Well, I went there with a bit of a chip on my shoulder because I've never been the biggest fan of the Windows team on the whole. And so I went there with fairly low expectations. I had blogged a list of things that I'd hoped would happen at Build, and surprisingly, most of them came true. The biggest part of the story for me was how intrinsic XAML was to the new WinRT stack.
That, I think, had a huge impact on a lot of folks and was really shown off by the presentation in the first of the keynotes, in which they showed a Silverlight application written by Scott Guthrie ported over using the XAML to port it over to Windows 8. And I think that had a huge impact on a lot of XAML programmers.
It did and it didn't. I think you're right. The problem I had with that particular demo was that it was sleight of hand magic.
And what was the problem with that?
The problem with every demo is sleight of hand magic.
Isn't that the definition of demo?
It implied that XAML, Silverlight, maybe even WPF would come over fairly easy, and that's not true. The reason... When I first saw the demo, I was immediately a little suspicious because they went to an early demo from Silverlight 2 that Scott Guthrie had done. And so when I looked at the XAML stack immediately, you know, it's the first thing I did when I got my tablet, I realized why they'd chosen that particular demo, because it was missing most of the things required in Silverlight 3 and 4 and certainly 5 to be compatible. Almost any demo would have broken except something from Silverlight 2. Now, that doesn't mean that the WinRT XAML stack isn't going to support them, but they don't pay, and it's unclear at what level they're going to actually support.
Well, what is clear, I think, is that the basic mindset and skill set of being a XAML programmer will be portable.
Absolutely.
Whether you'll be able to take actual XAML code, port it over as is an open question to what degree you'll be able to do that.
And honestly, you know, my job is to be cynical, right? So make sure everyone understands that. And this is the reason I have tried to avoid keynotes the last decade or so, is that typically the demos and keynotes are there to excite, not to inform. And it's always been troubling to me that that has been the fact.
Well, you'll like my keynote coming up in Bulgaria because it's informational in the extreme, to the point of perhaps putting half of Eastern Europe to sleep.
That is an interesting thing. I mean, you've got the idea, people expect with a keynote, especially something like Build or PDC, to see a little bit of a vision and not okay, here's the finished product. And I think that balance is tricky. And definitely, you know, people were screaming for more information early on some of this, you know, and there's kind of a trade-off there.
Of course, of course. And I just want to frame it as I understand who I am.
Yeah.
I understand my role is to be cynical about it. And, it really was the first thing I did was pop up in Visual Studio on the tablet. I wasn't playing with the UI at all because I really did want to understand at what level. And what I think is significant about what they're doing here is that they're building a XAML stack inside of WinRT, not on top of WinRT. And the reason that's significant is that it's going to be hardware accelerated in the same way. And oddly, it's a lot like Silverlight. Silverlight, the rendering engine is all in unmanaged code, different unmanaged code on different platforms, but still in unmanaged code. And some part of the stack is written on top of that in managed code, most notably the data binding stack. But in WinRT, it's all going to be pushed down into into the unmanaged code stack. And so it should perform really well.
You know, I thought that was interesting, too. I talked to people, and some first impressions people had was like, oh, man, this is unmanaged. And you know, and then after a little thought, it's like, well, so exactly as you're saying, so is Silverlight. It's the runtime, you know, is the development experience you're familiar with in XAML and C#. But under the hood, there's crazy optimized unmanaged code, and it's packed with 7-zip, and they're squeezing bytes to make the install really fast. And, you know, it's what goes on under the hood is nothing like the code that you write on top of it.
Exactly.
But to be clear to anybody who is experiencing this for the first time, the actual application development can be done entirely in managed code using XAML and C#.
Correct.
Or at least that's one option for how you can produce WinRT applications.
And right. I was pretty happy that they brought the whole ecosystem on top of one platform. I'll say that as well. Bringing in the JavaScript guys and bringing in the C++ guys, saying we're all on equal footing now. The way they handled now I can't remember what it's called all of a sudden, but the taking the language services that kind of pushed them out to the different environments, I think was really smart.
Mm-hmm. So was your walk away from Build generally optimistic?
It was. It was. There's a lot of open questions. So I get the question a lot, what does Build mean to Silverlight? What does it mean to WPF? What does it mean to web development? And not a lot, in my opinion. What I mean by that is Silverlight is for a segment of the population that need things like to write applications that live in the browser that are rich client apps. And for a lot of clients, that portability between Mac and PC is really important. And WinRT doesn't change any of that.
Does it change your perspective at all as a Windows Phone programmer in terms of where your skills are going to be leverageable?
Maybe. Scott Guthrie, I just watched a video, I just read an interview from him where he talked about what this term of we're now XAML developers. We're not Silverlight or WPF or WinRT. We're just XAML developers. And I think that's a really good way of thinking about it. To me, I didn't care. I wanted to build with an attitude that may not have made a lot of people happy, and that was, I don't care if .NET goes away. I care if XAML goes away. Because I saw that Build as a potentially another, .NET PDC, something where they unveiled something really grandiose that changed the way we did development. I don't think it was quite up to that par, but I would have been okay if they said, we now have to do everything in C++ 11 and you can get the same benefit and da da da. As long as you allowed me to have the design separation with XAML, I would have been pretty happy.
Well, then you must have been quite happy here where you have the option of using managed code or unmanaged code or using scripting. And all of it with the separation of concerns and having XAML as the design language.
Absolutely.
I thought it was interesting, Sean, as you pointed out, the terms and the experience are all similar. Like XAML and C# development are, very similar to the experience of Silverlight or Windows Phone development. And so, but, some terms were changed and things were described differently. And so I thought it was interesting that, people with different expectations came out of Build having heard what they expected to hear. You know what I mean? So if you wanted to believe something was dead, it was. And if you wanted to believe nothing had changed, it hadn't. And it all depended kind of on how you wanted to frame what was happening. But like you said, the whole idea of XAML development carries forward pretty cleanly.
I really do think so. I still get the question, and this sort of perturbs me. In the Silverlight space, there's still some people running around claiming the sky is falling. They haven't announced Silverlight 6, so therefore Silverlight 5 must be the last version. And what's important about that story is Microsoft hasn't shipped Silverlight 5. So before they shipped Silverlight 4, no one ever cared that Silverlight 5 hadn't been talked about because they hadn't shipped it yet. And I feel like we're in the same place. I also think the Silverlight's pretty mature. What would they add in 6 that is big or revolutionary? I could pick a handful of things that I would like, but none of them are, earth-shattering. Honestly, Silverlight 5 isn't even a very big release.
Now, Sean, I know that you have a new course, and maybe you could tell us a little bit about it in detail, that tries to bring together, if I understand it, the skills that a Silverlight or a XAML programmer might have with some of the skills needed to put things onto the web. Can you talk a little bit about what the thinking was behind that course and help me sort out what the course actually teaches?
Sure. The idea that I've been kind of talking about the last year is that we're going to have to learn as developers more platforms. So, the web alone doesn't get us into onto every device in a rich way. It doesn't get us onto every computer in a rich way. We learned that kind of story with Silverlight, that building large applications purely in the browser is difficult. But the reverse is also true. Creating rich, fully reachable web applications that have to go out to people like consumers the web does really well. And so the idea of, you know, trying to take all your skills and put them in one boat, I think is kind of a mistake. So we decided to put together a course that is really web development for XAML developers. We wanted to show them that they can take the same markup skills they have in XAML and how those really apply to something like HTML 4 and 5. We also wanted to show them how to be able to do things with a rich client-side model using JavaScript, using MVVM in the browser for these certain pages and certain sites that need to have more of a thick client-y feel, where there's a lot of interaction going and you don't just want to do tons and tons of postbacks.
Now, I want to come back to this MVVM in the browser, but you mentioned JavaScript. Are you teaching the various libraries and frameworks such as jQuery and Knockout.js?
Yeah, the idea is that we're going to help people get up to speed with what is happening on the web today, which is primarily JavaScript, jQuery, jQuery UI, as well as MVVM in the browser. And we've chosen to kind of hang our hat on Knockout.js as a library to do this. There's, as with most things that are out there in JavaScript now, there's probably a handful, maybe a dozen libraries that allow you to do sort of MVVM type development. But Knockout.js is the one that feels the most mature and the one that I've had the most luck programming against.
And so tell us a little bit about the purpose of that library and how that library looks and feels.
Sure. It's a JavaScript library that essentially allows you to create objects that represent your view models. And then they use annotations in the DOM to do both things like templating as well as data binding. And they use this concept of observable so that as objects change in the data, the bindings are updated. So you can think about it as really like a data binding stack, a client-side data binding stack against the HTML DOM.
Well, and really the same idea carries across, so that you're updating data in a view model and the bindings just, you know, you don't concern yourself with updating the page and, you know, finding an element and updating the value and then when something happens, updating it back into the view model. You just set the bindings and work, right? I mean, very similar to how you do this in Silverlight, Windows Phone, anywhere else.
It's similar. In fact, you know, they have the notion of observable in the way of objects that can be bound to collections and individual objects. But they also have the notion of something like commanding, which is really just binding to functions, right? Now, you could bind those through, you know, jQuery-esque, just event handlers, or you could actually bind them through binding directly to functions in events. It's a pretty small little library that does a lot, really gives you that full power of what you would want in a data binding stack directly in the browser.
But just to be clear, the language that you're actually writing in is JavaScript and HTML. Even though you're using the MVVM pattern, you're not using the languages of Silverlight or WPF.
Not at all. It's all JavaScript. It's all HTML DOM for the design language, all CSS for describing what the look and feel of the pages are. And it's using one of the interesting parts is that for templating, and what I mean by templating is being able to create things like data templates, if you want to think about from Silverlight, they have a pluggable engine for their templates. So you could use jQuery templates if that's what you're comfortable with. They have their own kind of simplified style of templating, or if you have a third-party templating engine that you're, you know, in love with, you could certainly use any of them. It's actually It's engineered with a lot of plugs for you to put stuff in. So if you don't like the way the data binding syntax is, you can actually plug your own in, but no one will.
Well, and that's actually, it looks like, just having read a post this week from Boris Moore, who worked on the jQuery templating thing, that there are some changes with that and that they're moving now to a JS Views and JS Render plugin. And so it looks like Steve Sanderson's, you know, decision to make that pluggable may have really paid off, because over time that may change.
Absolutely. And the one that they've used implicit, I haven't run into walls with, so I haven't had to go to these others. They just recently decoupled themselves from jQuery templates and just decided to have a really simple version, which is basically if something's in a container and it looks like a template, they'll make it a template for you.
So, Sean, if I'm a Silverlight or a XAML programmer or a Windows Phone programmer listening to this, should I begin to panic that I really now need to learn all of those skills that I've been hearing about and putting off around JavaScript and HTML5 and CSS3?
No, you should be excited that you have to learn all these other technologies you've been putting off. This is a key point that I've been trying to point developers at is, I think back of 2000, 2001 timeframe when .NET came out. And there were two kinds of people. There were the people that looked at the new .NET stack and was like, this is exciting. Let's dive in and learn. And there were the people who didn't want to give up VB or MFC or ATL or whatever they were doing. And many of them are still doing that. And so you can decide Silverlight's it. Silverlight's not going away. It's all fine. But the reality is if you're a developer, and I think most developers got into this because we were excited about learning, that most of the concepts you're learning that you learned in Silverlight are really applicable across these different ecosystems. You don't have to choose.
I think that's really key, Sean. Two things you just pointed out. One is that it is exciting to learn new things as long as they're exciting, great new things, you know, that give you more power and flexibility and all that. I was talking to Rick Barraza at the Mixer party at Build, and he's always been doing crazy stuff with, you know, image manipulation and pixel shaders and all this stuff in WPF and Silverlight. And he said he was just ecstatic, like, because he said, we've got a new frontier. You know, there are new things, and some new things are going to be some supported, and there's going to be some new things that are just out of reach and aren't supported, and I'm going to do it. I'm going to figure out how to make it happen. Like, that's great. You know, that's the excitement that I first had when I, like, first saw Silverlight 1.0, and I was like, wow, this is a new thing to try out, you know?
I'm totally with you there. And I don't think you need to learn every stack incredibly deep here, and it may be that you need to understand it so you can work with the developers who are going to learn those stacks. But this concept of the new platform is a bunch of platforms. You know, you may need to learn MonoDroid and MonoTouch. You may need to learn Objective-C and Java in order to really take whatever you're building and make sure it has feeders to everywhere. You're going to have a website, you're going to have a mobile website, you're going to have apps on different phones, on different tablets, as well as on the desktop. That's the way software is going to be written over the next 10 years.
So let's talk about the learning curve for a moment. Let's assume that you're a XAML programmer, you're used to the Microsoft stack, but you buy both the premise that it's time to extend the platform to more platforms, and also you buy the excitement. It's been reawakened inside you, that desire not to be a production programmer, but to be an innovator. And you say, okay, I'm with you, Sean. I'm ready to go. Where should we go? What should we be reading? Where should we be learning all of this?
Other than taking courses from us. No, really, you know, I've always found
Before you leave that one, if somebody did want to take a course from you, what's the website?
Agilitrain.com. That's AGILITRAIN.com.
Okay, great.
But in the reality is that most developers learn by doing, not by reading, not by watching, but by doing. And so taking that opportunity to say, you know, I have this little pet project, I have my blog, I have this or that, and just take a page to start playing around with understanding what jQuery is, or going to the Firefox tooling and just kind of doing the REPL version of jQuery. Just getting your feet wet is liable to excite you. And then taking what you've learned in this kind of small example and saying, well, how does that apply? Do I still need to do things like separate responsibility, separation of views and logic, getting my data, all that sort of things that you've already learned? You've learned how to do that stuff, being able to then apply that to, you know, wherever you end up having to write code. The reality is that every language we deal with, JavaScript, Java, even Objective-C has a for loop, has a switch, has an if statement. Learning the new languages themselves aren't a huge leap. It's usually learning the platforms, not the language.
Well, the platforms and also the patterns. And that brings me full circle back to MVVM, which you were saying is now applicable not only in XAML-based programming, but also now potentially in JavaScript-based programming.
Correct.
So let's talk about that for a minute. I've certainly read and even written some about the getting started in the separation of concerns between the view and the view model and the model. But then when the rubber hits the road and it's time to actually build something, there's, for many of us, a conceptual hurdle there of, well, how do I get started with this, and how do I communicate between the view and the view model so that when something happens in the view, it's triggering some kind of action in the view model. Can you talk a little bit about what the fundamentals are there?
Sure. There's two pieces that I think that are key there. When teaching this, these are the things that typically resonate. We've all heard about MVC and MVP before, and some of us have implemented and kind of understand the interaction there. The key difference with MVVM is that data binding is the glue. So that the job of building the view model, if you will, is to expose that data through to the view. Now, the confusion, that demo always works well. when people start building larger pieces, they go, well, how do you communicate between view models? And like you said, how do you communicate from the view back to the view model? And that's where really something like the eye commanding support, the idea that you're not only, when we think of data binding, we think about data binding verbs, I'm sorry, nouns, right? I've got a customer, I've got a person, I've got an invoice. I'm going to data bind this noun to the UI. And I know how to do that in a pretty straightforward way. I've done data binding a long time. The difference here is that by using the commanding, you're going to also bind verbs. That's the communication glue between the view and the view model. View model is going to supply data, and then the view is going to allow when the user does something to tell the view model to do the work. And so, you know, in a perfect world, and I'm going to say that very clearly, in a perfect world, you will have very few, if any, actual event handlers in your views. In a perfect world, the XAML would be the only piece of it. We know in practice that it's not dogma. The pattern has to work for you, and this is something I've been saying for a long time about all patterns, is the patterns have to work for you. And so getting that separation is great, but at some point, doing enough architecture, doing enough MVVM is what you're going to have to come down to. I was reading something on MVVM on the phone recently, and my key feedback was, this is great. You know, you're talking about doing unit testing, doing IOC, doing view model location and all this stuff, but it is a phone. Do you need all of that stack on a small device? And you might not. So
that's fine. That's great. When you want to do that commanding, there's limited built-in support for commanding other than with buttons and things derived from buttons. So correct. You're going to need to somehow impose that commanding structure on other events.
Correct. And in the case of Silverlight and WPF, and even on the phone, on the Windows phone, I should say, there's great support for this if you look at Lawrence Bignon. I'm pretty sure I butchered his name, but I'm going to stick with that pronunciation these days. Lawrence Bignon's MVVM Lite framework has a attached property that you can attach to pretty much any event to support commanding. And that's the key usually in doing these things. His framework also has this thing called a relay command, which is a way to do messaging between VMs as well, or even from VM to view. From VM to model, or even a top-level containers and things like that. And so those are the missing pieces that sometimes don't make themselves into the 45-minute demo at the user group.
So when you're teaching all of this and you're teaching your new course on using these skills but applying them in web-based applications, are you finding that folks are able to make those transitions, or are you finding that people are just overwhelmed, conceptually overwhelmed?
Well, when I'm teaching MVVM in the Silverlight course, one of the key ways we teach it, because I've learned after a while that you can have slideware that, you know, paints the picture and all that, but until they kind of see it working, it's hard for them to conceptualize. So what we do is we build MVVM without any framework. We actually write all the little plumbing pieces so they can see what's going on. And then we replace it with some of the plumbing pieces so we can see, oh, you don't have to write every line of code we have, but now you understand what they're doing. You're not just taking what you saw in a demo or in a book or through a Google search and putting it in your code and hoping that it's going to be the right architecture. We want them to understand, you know, for us when we teach, if they get the why, even if they don't get the how from the course, which they often do, but if they don't, that's okay with us because the why is so much more important. If you can instill in people why something works or why it should work or why the separation is important, the rest of it falls into place.
Sean, I just think that's really important. And I think that goes back to something you and Jesse were discussing earlier with the idea of that, you know, do I have to learn all these things? And it's not as difficult as people make it out to be, because if you try and learn things by just brute force memorization and just, you know, beating your head against an API until you know it, you know, like that's one way to try and learn something. And that's maybe in the past been how we've done things because they were all so different. But now, you know, all these things are using similar patterns, MVVMs, you know, working on in a lot of different places. You've got declarative UI, you've got common patterns like MVC and MVP, applying in, you know, a lot of different development environments. And so it's just so much easier to transfer that knowledge once you understand the whys and the patterns. And, you know, instead of trying to memorize things, like understand why things work, and then you have a pretty good guess if you don't know something of where to look and how to apply it.
Yeah. And I think the thing that my hope is for developers these days, especially with these, with more having to learn more than maybe we did at some point earlier, is to not fall into the trap of GBD, as I call it, Google-based development. And this is where basically you take code that you found in searches, plug it in, it seems like it works, and that's okay, without really understanding what is going on. As developers, it's really, that's our job. Our job isn't to write code. Our job is to understand what the system's doing so that the code we write not only makes sense, but will continue to work because it makes sense.
Dang, I've been extolling the virtues of Bing-based development for months now. I'm going to have to revise what I'm saying.
You really should.
But I think the key difference, and you nailed it, Sean, is it's one thing to use Bing or Google to find your API, to find the missing code snippet that helps the penny drop, and on the other hand, to just blindly copy things in and not be understanding what it is that they're doing and why they were designed that way.
And I see this. I've been interviewing some people for a project I'm working on, mostly virtually. And so they've been pointing me at some websites they've been working on. And the first thing I do is look at view source. And I see places where they've just pasted in JavaScript they copied from someplace. And that's the death knell to me. I'm like, really? You're hoping this works? Sometimes even the copyright notice is still there.
I like that. That's a good giveaway.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the time, those are the same people that say, you know, I hate JavaScript / CSS / Silverlight / whatever. And it's like, well, you didn't make any effort to actually learn how or why it works.
Correct.
You know, whereas, you know, I mean, for years, I think most web developers, if they're honest, would admit that they did a lot of JavaScript copy and paste and thought, ah, it's just a stupid toy. And then after, you know, now people are finally waking up to, hey, this is actually a pretty sophisticated language here that's managed to work for, you know, a lot longer than a lot of other languages have, you know.
It's been an interesting kind of round trip because I actually taught Silverlight 1 quite a bit when it first came out, which was all JavaScript plus XAML.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things I thought might happen at Build was they said, oh, no more managed code. It's all going to be JavaScript plus XAML, which I thought would have been a bit ironic. And obviously that didn't happen. But, you know, having to reintroduce myself in some ways, now that I'm doing a little bit more web work, to JavaScript, you know, the state of the art of work at today, whereas it was 6 or 7 years ago, it's a lot easier to work with than it was then. There were just, even CSS is a lot easier. It's a lot easier to keep that separation, you know, of styles out of your code than it was, you know, just a few years ago.
Is it a lot easier to understand and to work with CSS 3 than it was?
Than it was for CSS 1, yes. But still missing some key pieces. This is one of the things we're going to be teaching in the course is, you know, when we think about CSS and how it relates to something like XAML styles, there's a lot of overlap. We can kind of draw the line and go, fonts are here and fonts are there. CSS selectors here and the type selectors here. You can do a lot of that one-to-one matching, but there's still things that both have that the other sides don't. One of the things that boggles my mind that CSS 3, for all their forward thinking, still doesn't do is named colors. It's a soapbox I've been on for years now. I'm like, really? I really still need to go copy and paste every time I tweak a color, please.
Right. And then you see people using things like less and sass and,
yep,
and other things on top of it to bolt on what really probably should have been there from day one.
Yeah, I've tried to avoid as many of those, CoffeeScript and such, because I don't want to get too far away from the code that's actually running on the site. That's kind of what it comes down to. That doesn't mean that I'm going to code an IL, and so I'm not going to learn C#. But if there were a meta language on top of C#, I'd be hard pressed to go, let me learn that, so that I can know, you know, what it's outputting. I don't know if either of you looked at the new language from Google that they were trying to kind of push as the maybe a new web standard. But
just
hello,
briefly. Yeah.
My favorite part of it was the 9-line hello world produced over 80,000 lines of JavaScript. And that's kind of the problem with a lot of these meta languages to me, is purely generated code isn't necessarily going to be all that performant.
Mm-hmm. Before I let you go, let me ask you a little bit about your book, which is called Essential Windows Phone 7.5. Is that a book targeted at Windows Phone 7.0 developers or new Windows Phone developers?
It's targeted at new Windows Phone developers primarily, though it's leaning towards Silverlight developers. So people who know Silverlight that want to come to the phone, that's really who we were targeting. But if you don't know Silverlight, we do cover it and point you at other external resources to learn it more deeply. But essentially in two chapters in my book, I cover what Pete Brown covers in 20 chapters in his book. So we aren't trying to teach people Silverlight from the ground up in this book. We're going to give you enough XAML and enough kind of the styling stack to get your feet wet. And for the Silverlight stuff, we're pointing people at other resources if those two chapters aren't enough. The other 9 chapters are all about the phone, all about the phone integrated service.
I know that the book isn't published yet, but can you share some of the TOC with us?
Sure. Actually, if you go out to wp7book.com, which is forwards over to my site, you can actually go look at the full TOC. You can look at the, you can even buy it today to get the rough draft, as it were, of it, with the promise of getting the full book in December when it's released. But essentially, we're covering everything from isolated storage and databases, using the camera on the phone, using tasks, how to get it through the marketplace. We're talking about spend a chapter talking about why design on the phone is different, so how to get away from mouse events and use touch, how to take something like a website and how you would produce something that looked good on the phone. And a big part of this was trying to get people to understand that building for a phone is not building for the desktop and is not building for the web, that it's something separate and distinct.
Well, I'm looking forward to that, but I got to say I'm also hoping that your course will do well so that you'll do a book on converting your skills over to, or expanding your skills over to the web as well, because I think you're onto something very powerful there.
Well, as I say after every book, I'm never, ever going to write ever again, so...
John, sure, can you relate to that, John?
Yes.
We should start an organization called Authors Anonymous.
Yeah.
Yep.
After all 8 books I've written, I've said it. So I'm sure it's going to stick this time.